Escalation in northern Afghanistan is on the rise. It is more so in Badakhshan, Faryab, Kunduz, Badghis, Saripul and Jowzjan provinces. Once characterized as a relatively peaceful region, today there is not a single province that fits into that characterization in northern Afghanistan. Afghan parliamentarians say war is shifting from south to northern Afghanistan. As war is shifting, so does the involvement of foreign militants in the conflict. Last week, Afghan president said that only in Kunduz, militants from more than 10 nationalities are operating. And now, Afghan Interior Minister calls Central Asian governments for cooperation. On this talk show, we will look into why has the security situation escalating in northern Afghanistan and what are the chances of cooperation between Afghanistan and Central Asian governments. Hello and welcome to the program in Prague at the headquarters of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. I am Mohammed Tahir, host of the show and director of Turkmen Service at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. In the face of increasing activities of the militants, security map of Afghanistan is increasingly changing. It is so more radically in northern Afghanistan, areas bordering Central Asia. The Afghan president in several occasions spoke about the role of Islamic State militants in the conflict. On the other side of the border, Tajik and Russian officials are alarmed about the increasing threat by the Afghanistan-based militants. In the face of this threat, Turkmenistan has fenced its entire border with Afghanistan. Now, Afghan Interior Minister says we need help from Central Asian governments to protect the border. So let's bring our guests for today's discussion. Joining us from Prague, Fruit Bijan, RFERL journalist who has just returned from northern Afghanistan. Welcome, Fruit.
Thank you for having me.
Also from Prague, journalist Bruce Pioneer, who is author of Kishlag Awazi, a Central Asia blog at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. Bruce, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Also from Prague, Amin Mudakik, director of Radio Mashal, who is originally from northern Afghanistan. Amin, welcome to our show.
Thank you.
And engineer Kamal Safi, a parliamentarian from Kunduz province, is joining us from northern Afghanistan. Engineer Safi, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Fruit, let's start with you. Tell us how the ground reality has changed in northern Afghanistan since your last visit.
I visited mainly Mazar-e-Sharif, provincial capital of Balkh province. Even there, Balkh is seen as the last oasis of peace in the entire region. But even there is trepidation, there is fear that the war is coming even to Balkh. And we spoke to a lot of tribal elders, religious figures from the different districts around Balkh, and even there is increasing violence. The Taliban is overrunning villages, he's threatening to overrun district centers. But Balkh is only obviously just one part of the problem. Outside of Balkh, especially in Faryab and in the northeast, we are seeing really, you know, the Taliban attacking and posing a huge threat.
Mr. Safi, your province has witnessed some of the horrific incidents of recent months. What is causing to this escalation?
Actually, you know, it is an international war, and this borders fighting here war on Afghan soil. And Afghan soil is using as a strategic geography between the two Asias. We haven't been treated as a nation from any stakeholders during this war. That's why we are nowhere. And one thing I would like to reflect here that we are accepting to north. What is extending to north? War is in south. War is in eastern Afghanistan. You know, ISIS is in majority in eastern Afghanistan, in Nangarhar. And they are trying to save away from eastern Afghanistan to northern Afghanistan, passing through central Afghanistan. And this is the way which had already been used by Afghan Mujahideen during Soviet war, as you people remember. So war is extending north from Badakhshan to Korea. The whole border with the Central Asia has been destabilized. And different stakeholders have stayed in this war, fighting their war on our soil. And we have no benefit from the war. We have been badly killed, we have been badly displaced, we have been destroyed badly, our houses, thousands of our people are now under the sky with hot season, even in this holy month of Ramadan.
Mr. Sabi, I understand the effect of war on people. My question were, why war is coming to northern Afghanistan? What is the reason of this escalation there?
I told you that that is an international war, and the international, different international stakeholders are shifting or extending war from the region or from area to the area as per their national interest. This is what has many, many times mentioned by Afghan National Security Council, that some of the stakeholders of the war are looking to destabilize or to have in a sense of control over that border. So that's the reason.
So who are those international players, the one you are mentioning, Mr. Safi?
You know, it's a long war. We are in this war since 4 decades, and I cannot name any nation personally, but you know that it's an international war and different people are here.
Right. I mean, let me bring you here. Why it is so difficult to control the increasing escalation in northern Afghanistan, as such that fighting is quickly spreading from Kunduz to Badakhshan to Faryab, other provinces, one by one?
Before coming to this question, let me clarify one thing, that in my opinion, the war is not shifting to the north. It doesn't make sense that if you say that the war was only in the south, there was nothing going on in the north. But I think, in my view, the true reality is that the war is intensifying in the north.
Mm-hmm.
The war is increasing in the north. So the battlefield are expanding in the whole country. But particularly why this year the battlefield has are hot in the north, and why the war has increased and the violence increased in the north, I think it has basically two reasons. One is the drawdown. The foreign forces left Afghanistan, and unfortunately, the division of or the allocation of the Afghan forces to the northern Afghanistan is unbalanced comparing to the south.
Yeah.
For the whole north, you know, I mean, north of Hindu Kush, from Badakhshan up to Faryab, there is only one division. You know, while in Kandahar, in Helmand, there are two divisions. There are two divisions of that. So that, on one side, you see the U.S. troops and the NATO troops are leaving Afghanistan, and they are leaving Kunduz, you know, which shifted the balance. And on another side, the Afghan security forces are not enough for all this big area. So the Taliban or the militant capitalized on this point. And the second thing is that there are a new reality among the Taliban,
mm-hmm.
which are emerging in Afghanistan. And these new realities are basically concerning to the north of Afghanistan. They have interest in northern Afghanistan. Like, for example, the former IMU, Islamic Movement of Uzbekistan, who has been expelled from Pakistan in 2007, in 2006, in 2008, all these 3 years, turned now to IS. And they removed the former name and now called themselves Jundullah to accommodate Tajik militant, to accommodate Kyrgyz and Kazakhs and Uzbeks. All these militants want to move under the IS direction to northern Afghanistan. It is not the Taliban time that the Taliban say, okay, stay where you are. You are our guest. Now the IS is telling them, go to your original area, you know, to do your homework. So it's natural that if militants are coming from Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, Kyrgyzstan, they will not stay in southern Afghanistan. They are coming to the northern Afghanistan in great number to get closer to their main targets. So I think these two factors join together and they make the northern provinces of Afghanistan uncontrollable because the Afghan forces are stretched, you know, to their ability, they cannot cope with the situation.
Right. The way I'm understanding, Amin, from your points, that the northern Afghanistan is being hijacked by foreign militants there.
That's true. You know, the Afghan commanders on the front, you know, increasingly seeing, particularly in Faryab, in Qaisar, in Almar. And yesterday there was a statement from the Afghan commanders that the foreign militants are in charge. Actually, you know, just for as matter of formality, they use the name of Taliban, but in reality, they are the people who are calling the shots. because the intensity of the war proved that the Taliban were there last year. The Taliban were there 2 years ago, 3 years ago, but they were not able to put that much pressure to intensify the battle to that level. But as they are joining, now the it's proving that they are able to fight the Afghan forces in the
Let me bring Mrs. Sapi here. What Amin is telling, that the increasing role of foreign militants in the recent escalation in northern Afghanistan, what is your reading on the ground? What role are they playing there?
Look, the foreign militants, most of them are skilled people with high passion, with high energy, and with a clear thought and objective towards war. And they have also encouraged our local militants as well to join the European and to be with them. And so far as the other benefit from their side to their war is that that the foreign troops always have command, the battlefield command in their hands most of the time. And this is what they call they fight with a passion. They fight with a sense, a mission, and things like this. They have actually worked on the brain of the people, even on the local militants as well. And that's why they have encouraged local militants, and they have increased the volume of the war in the area.
Bruce, the fact the war in northern Afghanistan is being dominated by foreign militants or supervised by the foreign militants there. First of all, your point on this. Second is, what does this tell us?
Well, I think that the two points you raised actually go together. You would expect that if you were going to operate in northern Afghanistan, where there's the populations are Turkmen, Uzbek, Tajik, that in order to get local support, you would send Turkmen, Uzbeks, and Tajiks up there. And we know that a lot of these foreign fighters, Amin mentioned that they had been coming out in 2006, 2008. And then, of course, last year, the Pakistani army launched a military operation in North Waziristan and chased a bunch more of the IMU back into there. So, you know, they've gravitated toward the borders of the region that they originally came from, but they're also mixing with their own people. There's no linguistic problem there. There's really not that much of a cultural difference. And in fact, many of them might be related when they go up there. So these are the best emissaries or missionaries, if you wish, to put into this region. If you send Pashtuns, you're not going to get as much sympathy. There's the old animosity between, you know, the Pashtun groups and the groups that were in that part of northern Afghanistan for many, many centuries. But when an Uzbek shows up to an Uzbek community, even when his accent shows him to be from Central Asia, he's more readily accepted. Same with the Tajiks. So the two things, like I said, are connected, absolutely. It would make sense, if you want popular support, that you would send someone who looks, speaks, dresses, behaves like the people in the region, so that it clears up a lot of these other formalities you have to get out of the way to establish a proper relationship. So I'm not surprised that the foreign militants are active up there, because in a way they're not entirely foreign militants. We're not talking about Arabs. You know, we're talking about indigenous peoples of Inner Asia who are going and linking up with
the same culture, language, and everything, right? Fruit, from this picture, it looks like foreign militants, either from Central Asia or locally affiliated Taliban militants or local ethnic groups, it seems like they are in charge of the town there. What role Afghan forces are playing in that part of the country?
As Amin said, that the Afghan forces, the police and the army are greatly overstretched. I think what we see now is the big role of pro-government militias. We're talking about Afghan local police.
Yeah.
And we're seeing that this in itself is a very risky strategy. On the one hand, because there's not enough numbers of police and army, the government doesn't have much choice of using these local militias, even old Mujahideen militias. But on the flip side, this has a risk of, you know, bringing up again a lot of old competition between different ethnic groups, between different factions. And one of the things that recently happened was that the Balkh governor, Atta Mohammed Noor, and General Dostum, the vice president, they came to a coalition together to fight. And a lot of people that I spoke to in Mazar-e-Sharif in particular were very, you know, they were scared of another civil war again. Because if they said that if these two strongmen work together, there is a chance that, you know, they will fight the Taliban stronger. But if something goes wrong in that relationship, that things could get very, very ugly very quickly.
Welcome back to the second half of the discussion. So this is what the situation stands as of today in northern Afghanistan. In the second leg of our discussion, we will be looking into how to deal with it and what kind of regional cooperation is needed. In recent months, besides increasing shift of militants to northern Afghanistan, we have also seen three unusual developments taking place in the front line. First, militants simply do not attack and run away anymore, but have shown an ability and willingness to hold the ground. As we speak, there are several districts or villages which are under full or semi-control of the militants across northern Afghanistan. Second, the nature of brutality has changed. Militants kidnap civilians and military forces likewise, and at least in some cases we have seen kidnapped people are being beheaded in an IS-style brutality. Third, increasing number of foreign fighters, as some of the panelists mentioned, including IS-affiliated Central Asian militants, are seen in the front line. And lately, famous warlord Gulbuddin Hikmatyar also seen supporting IS in Afghanistan. So what that tells us in terms of changing nature of the conflict in northern Afghanistan and Afghan army's ability to deal with this, Fruit, you might wish to start.
As we can see, that there is a shift on the Taliban side, that they will attack vulnerable positions. And I think, as Amin said before, that you see the north as being extremely vulnerable because there are shortages of soldiers. There is lack of focus in that area. And so, you know, we see the Taliban and foreign fighters, because it's much easier for them to settle there. And like you said, there's a reason why they're there, and their families are even there, because there is that lack of focus from the central government, making it much more easier for them to fight and also to stay there and take ground and keep ground.
I mean, what's the strategy of Afghan government to deal with this situation? Is it working or failing? What's your comment?
I think, as I mentioned, the military strategy in the north is so far failing, but there are indications that they are going to fix it. Dr. Abdullah's trip to Kunduz in Mazar-e-Sharif in the past 2 days show that there is increased focus to the northern Afghanistan. As I said before, nine northern province absolutely need two divisions. For Faryab, Saripol, Jawzjan, and Mazar, you need one division. And then come back to Samangan, Kunduz, Takhar, Badakhshan. There is an absolute need for another division. Because reports coming from this 18 division, they are overstretched. They say that they have one brigade in Kunduz. Mm-hmm. That brigade has to fight in Takhar, has to fight in Badakhshan, has to go up to Khostak in Kiran-e-Minjan to fight. And even that brigade is not allocated to Kunduz, while the Kunduz is under threat. So they absolutely need two divisions with full air support. Mm-hmm. Because I remember when Kunduz was under attack, it took 2 days that they get their share of four helicopters, you know, to reach them and give them air cover. Secondly, they should be a central command for the northern Afghanistan and for the edge zone, because one of the things which seems very, very damaging to the control of the war is the lack of coordination between the different forces. As you mentioned, there are army, there are police, there are this frontier police, there are local militia, Afghan local police, mm-hmm. but there is no single point to coordinate all these efforts. In Jalri's situation, you know, in Jalri's attack, you know, people were asking, you know, this police under siege were asking different ministries, you know, in different sources for help. If there is one point, you know, one telephone can help, you know. One telephone will tell you whether it is possible or not possible. The same situation is in the north. You have 18 divisions, you have forces in Jawzjan, the provincial forces, you have the local forces, you have a central command for the zonal command for the police, you know, but there is not a single force which can help an area under the threat. When Kunduz was under attack, some forces were coming from Balkh, some forces were coming from Kabul, you know, some forces were coming from other provinces, local militia. But when they were coming together, there was nobody to coordinate them. There was no authority to command all of them.
Right,
so
right.
That's another problem that has to be fixed.
Let's bring Mr. Safi here. Mr. Safi, we are talking about the Afghan government strategy to deal with the situation in areas where you represent. I mean, just mentioned some of the confusion, which is kind of adding to an existing problem there. So what is your point about the way Afghan government is trying to deal with this situation? What the strategy is, and is it working or failing? What's your comment on this?
Still, I don't think that Afghan government has a specific strategy particularly relevant to NAC. This is what we have been heard since many times, that they are working on it. Our National Security Council is working on this. But there are a lot of other internal factors affecting this war. Like, we are not on the same page with regard to the definition to this militancy or terrorism. And the second thing is that you know that we our presidential election went to the crisis, and we came up with a weak coalition government. And we found the lack of coordination, lack of proper communication, lack of proper war equipment. And there are a lot of warlords affecting this war as well, drug dealers, land grabbers, ammunition dealers, and local police. These are the factors affecting this war, and the government has to come up with a strategy, which we currently don't see anywhere, and in which we have many, many times asked the government to address these issues. Like, one of the most paramount factors and increasing the militancy in North is that somebody talked about the tribes in North, and he mentioned that Turkmens are there, Tajiks are there, and Uzbeks are there. Pashtuns are also there in majority. And you know, during Taliban era, they had this common language, and Taliban used to be close with them. Even the local Pashtuns were not part of their mission, but they had the same language, speaking the same language. That's why they were a bit close. Even not in the political agenda, but just by the language. And when their government fell down and they came out of the power and they left the Syria, so the war line reached to the Pashtuns' door automatically. And further that, Pashtuns sidelined over there, and Pashtuns badly affected over there, and Pashtuns not included particularly in the armed forces in the north. On the other side, if you see that the enemy of the, as a militant are working with a high caliber, with a high profession and high potential, and they observe this potential that major Pashtun ethnic majority has been sidelined, and they are not with the system, and that's why they work within this and use them as a potential and absorb them, particularly junior youth, when they have no part in the national forces, national security forces, when they have no part in the other government administration, when they have no part in the judiciary, when they don't keep their faces in the government mirror and the system mirror. That's why they sidelined and they took distance from the system, and they went to the militancy corridor. So these are the, and this is unfortunately, you know, I somewhat think that I'm personally Pashtun talking about this. No, it's not like this. This is what we have many times raised, that, hey, the government, the central government, should a commission to the northern Afghanistan. And what factors we have raised should be studied on the ground, and they should be regarded fully. Otherwise, it's quite difficult to cover the situation, particularly in this scenario.
Right. You are saying, as I understand, that some ethnic dimensions also playing in hands of the militants in northern Afghanistan. Is that the case?
Exactly. For sure. And that's in the favor of the militants. That's not in the favor of Afghan as a state or as a nation.
So we were talking about the strategy of the Afghan government, how to deal with that. Obviously, the points you have raised, Mr. Safi, is one way to go. One of the recent elements that we came across with is in the statement of Interior Minister Nurul Haq Ulumi, who has been recorded by the media last week, calling for Central Asian governments for cooperation. Let's have a listen first what he had to say, then we will continue discussion on his points.
در شمال گزارش آخری وارد تلویزیون که اینا با فامیلای خود همین خارجی‌های کلیشه بیرونی دارن زندگی میکنن.
The latest news I received from northern Afghanistan is this, that the foreign-linked militants have settled down with their families in the region. It's probably because they speak the same language, but more important is that they really want to influence our neighbors in the north. We shared the same thoughts with authorities in neighboring countries. We told them that, so far people of Afghanistan have protected you. We do not want that our territory is used against any of our neighbors. But please give us your resources, equipment, things like main exploding device, scanner to check cars. Because if our forces were properly equipped, a car full of explosives wouldn't be able to come up to the gate of Afghan parliament.
Bruce, we are coming to your playground here. As you heard, the minister wants Central Asian countries to come forward. Several days have passed since this statement. How the message is received in Central Asia?
Well, the Central Asians have been receiving this message actually for quite some time, and they're well aware of the difficulties and potential threat to themselves that comes out of Afghanistan. They are sympathetic. There's no doubt about it. And the people in Dushanbe and Tashkent certainly, and probably even Ashgabat, are well acquainted with members of the Afghan government, both the previous administration and the current administration. We mentioned Dostum earlier in the program. He made a trip to Uzbekistan and Kazakhstan at the start of last year and was greeted, you know, received by both the leaders of both those countries as well as top officials. So they do know there's a problem. Now, the thing with Central Asia is that they also, although they view Afghanistan as a neighbor, they also view it as I mentioned, a threat, but a potential contaminant of some site on some levels. So they're anxious to help out the Afghan government, and they're anxious that there's stability in Afghanistan. What they don't want to do publicly is be seen as strongly supporting one side or another because of the fluid nature of Afghan politics. They're kind of hoping that whoever ends up taking over and ruling Afghanistan, they'll be able to deal with them. So they're not willing to actually publicly and openly side with one particular person. They kind of, you know, they do provide training for border guards and police, and they let them come over. But they don't, except in rare circumstances in the past, have they ever openly sided with somebody. And I'm thinking of Massoud evacuating his planes to Tajikistan when the Taliban were moving on the Panjshir Valley many years ago. What they do behind the scenes is something totally different. However, I would say at this point that I cannot foresee them actually handing over weapons or even any very useful technical equipment to the Afghans, because they want it for themselves. They're worried that the threat will get onto their soil, and so they're not going to give over their best technology to Afghans on the hope that the Afghans will use it and keep the threat within Afghanistan. They're worried that the threat will cross the border, and so I really can't see them delivering any significant amounts of weapons. Like I said, I couldn't see them giving up, you know, the anti-mine vehicles like the U.S. just gave all those MRAPs to Uzbekistan, and they're staying in Uzbekistan. Uzbekistan will not give any of those over the border because they want them for themselves, just in case things go bad. You know, like I said, what we can see publicly is not the whole story. Obviously, Uzbekistan supported their people during when the Taliban were there in the late 90s. Tajikistan supported their people. Turkmenistan, of course, had the neutral policy, and which proved the best of all the countries. But the Central Asians are certainly sympathetic to the Afghan government, but they're not sure who's going to be in power in a year or 5 years from now. And so they're very reluctant to actually move openly and side with anyone at this point.
Right. Just a follow-up question on that. As we speak at this moment, Shanghai Cooperation Organization is meeting in Russia, exactly discussing how to deal with the situation in Afghanistan. What does this indicate in light of what the Afghan authorities are trying to push recently to pull together Central Asians to work with Kabul to deal with the situation?
The Shanghai Cooperation Organization rightly assesses the problems in Afghanistan as a direct threat to all of them. There's no doubt about it. All you have to do is look and see that three of them have actually borders with Afghanistan, that being China, Tajikistan, and Uzbekistan. Now, the other three are in close proximity, and that even includes Russia. So, of course, it's way up there on their list of priorities, and they're also interested in stability in Afghanistan. The big problem with that is they use Afghanistan kind of as one of the threads that ties the whole organization together, just because it is of common interest to all six of them. Will the Chinese give weapons to Afghanistan? No. I mean, they probably give money and some other support. Russia has been, of course, giving weapons to Afghanistan, mostly bought by the United States and its NATO allies lately, and does have a history in there. But there's a lot of talk that come out of these meetings and then really not much action, because what they're really interested in is hyping a threat that concerns them all and helps bind the organization together. But when it comes time to act, they're a lot slower, and I don't see many tangible results. Afghanistan's been on their radar screen for 15 years, and I haven't seen the Shanghai Cooperation Organization really do anything that made that much of a difference in Afghanistan. I don't expect it will at this meeting either.
Mr. Sapi, is there any avenue where Central Asian Afghan government can cooperate to deal with this situation? In other words, how best Central Asian governments can help Afghanistan?
Yes, of course. It's a common problem in the area. Terrorism affected Pakistan, terrorism affected Afghanistan, and it looks that terrorism in the area will affect the Central Asia as well. It's a common problem. So the common treatment is required in the area. And we all, the regional nations as well as the international partners, should honestly come up with a solid and single mandatory solution. We have a long border with Central Asia, and they have already raised their concerns. And during different visits, diplomatic visits from our end to Central Asia countries, they have raised their concerns. And it looks that they are willing to cooperate in this regard. And I think agenda between Afghanistan and Central Asian countries for the counterterrorism in the area will not be for that much benefit, as the agenda from all the regional stakeholders, the international stakeholders, if all of them come on the same page and come with one single mandatory solution, that will be acceptable and that will be workable. Otherwise, I don't think that the cooperation between the Central Asian countries and Afghanistan will be a full solution to the problem. It will be a solution up to some extent, but it will not be a full solution if some of the international stakeholders and some of the regional stakeholders ignored in this process. So what I would like to recommend here, that all the international and regional stakeholders should come up on the same page, and they should come up with a single mandatory solution to the issue.
Right. Bruce is not optimistic about that this will happen. So, Fruit and Amin, you got a minute or so to tell me this. What are the consequences in case if this cooperation takes place or does not take place?
It will not have a decisive role, but of course it will help the situation, particularly if they coordinate their intelligence, on the both side of the Axis River and the Kunduz Intihar section. That will help. If they also launch simultaneous attack on sometime, because sometimes when the militants are pressed, they cross the river easily and take refuge on the other side, and particularly in that area where there are jungles. That's a limited area, but that will help. And also if they strengthen the border, on Central Asian side, it does not allow militants to come in and swell the ranks of the militant in the Afghanistan side. And also this technical training, if not equipment, the training will help. There are a lot of Russian equipment on the Afghan side that the Afghans does not know very well. Take, for example, this artillery. You know, they are using Russian artillery, but they don't know the precise firing, you know. In the mortar, there are a lot of helicopters, and a lot of weapons are not being used precisely. And the most important help the Central Asian can do is not to support their own proxies, you know. Let the Afghan government take initiatives. So if they do, then they antagonize the other tribes, you know.
Fruit.
And as all of us agree, that Afghan war, you know, it is sort of a regional war that all the neighboring countries have a stake in. And if all countries, neighboring countries, are behind, you know, peace and prosperity in this country, that they will have to come together. And it could mean humanitarian aid, it could mean military help, it could mean economic aid.
Hmm.
But if there isn't, the status quo is going to continue and, you know, the Central Asia will see a blowback.
There you go. Thank you very much for sharing your thoughts on this important subject. We have to leave it here. Many thanks indeed for all of you for taking part in the program. Engineer Kamal Safi, a parliamentarian from Kunduz, Fruit Bijan, RFERL journalist who has just returned from northern Afghanistan, Amin Mudakik, director of Radio Mashal, Bruce Panier, the editor of Kishlak Awazi, a Central Asia blog at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. And dear listeners, thank you for listening to the podcast. As always, we welcome your thoughts. You can get in touch with us via rferl.org or you can post your comments on Facebook/RFERL or you can follow us on Twitter @RFERL. From me, Mohammed Tahir, and all of the team in Prague, thank you for listening. Bye-bye.